My name is Natalie Dawson, and I'm running for Haynes Borough Assembly.
Thank you, Natalie. What is your background?
I have a pretty diverse background. I've spent a lot of my adult life as an educator, primarily at university education, but also in adult education and K-12 experiential education programming. So I've worked a lot in and outside of the school. I've also had about 15 years in executive leadership experience running institutes at universities, as vice president for a national nonprofit organization, and currently as the director for strategic partnerships for an Alaska statewide philanthropic organization.
Do you have any previous political experience?
I have never run for office. However, I've worked a lot in support of policies and priorities for local, state, and national government officials and organizations that support government.
What's your involvement with the local community?
It's multifaceted. I do a lot of work for Chilkat Indian Village in Klukwan. I do volunteer work in the Chilkat Valley as board president for Haynes Hudson Trails. I try to volunteer in different community capacities, whether that's marine debris cleanup or helping with the Bears and Apples program, helping with education programs. I also try really hard through my work that's statewide to bring people to the Chilkat Valley to see what an amazing community we have throughout this area.
Why do you want to run?
I'm really excited for the opportunity to run for local office for a few different reasons. One, as an educator, I've always encouraged my students to get engaged in the civic process. You know, this is how a democracy runs. It's messy and it's, conversational, and it's a lot of research and then decision making based on as much information that you can distill as possible. And I've always encouraged others to run for office at the local, state, and national level. And I feel like I need to, give it a try myself. I saw this as a really great opportunity at this time because our community's facing a lot of decisions on big projects, on the direction of the valley, on, the kind of community we want to create now, but also in the future, in a world that's, changing pretty rapidly. And I feel like I can bring a lot of different skills to the conversations that are needed to consider all opportunities facing us.
What do you view as your role would be as an assembly member?
I feel like the role of an assembly member is to take in a lot of information about the issues facing the community. Everyone here is so busy. If you're working a full-time job or even a part-time job that's seasonal, we have a lot going on in our lives. And though a borough assembly position is largely a volunteer position, it is the responsibility of us to help distill a lot of information for the community, to go out there and talk to business owners, to talk to folks that are running our different infrastructure projects, to folks that are running the basic services of this community and in our borough government, asking them, what do they need? What do they see as the needs of this community? And then bring that to the whole people through the processes that can be facilitated by the assembly. And that's those opportunities for public forum every time we hold an assembly meeting. And I would, go out on a limb and say that we should probably hold more than just the assembly meetings, that we might want to have more town hall conversations that are led maybe by information that the assembly procures, but then can have presented to the public. Because there's so much happening in our community all the time, it can be hard to keep track of it all.
What part of the current assembly's work would you like to see continue, and maybe what would you like to see change?
I think the Borough Assembly has done a a great job of trying to take in, as I said, the many issues facing this valley. And it's a lot for a local government to handle. I mean, talking about heli permits for ski seasons and heliport developments and ports and harbors. And those are just the projects that, you know, pop up in the need for permits or big questions. But there's all the day-to-day operations. And so I applaud anyone who's on the borough assembly that takes on these positions and for many people who continue to do it year after year. However, what I am excited for and part of the reason I am running is because I feel like new energy and creativity is always needed, you know, and in government, you can have the same things happening simply because the momentum has been built to make them happen. I've been a part of many large institutions and bureaucracies over the years, and it can be hard to ask the question, why are we doing it this way? And is there a better way? And I'm not afraid to ask those questions. And I'm also not afraid to be wrong when I think I have an answer to one of those questions. And I think, you know, that vulnerability and willingness to consider new pathways is part of being a good elected official.
You mentioned helicopters. What do you see as the proper place of helicopters in Haynesboro?
The proper place of helicopters in the Haynesboro is one in which we feel, as an informed populace, we can make that decision together. And we've created a safe space to consider all the perspectives of everyone in the valley. Helicopters are a big impact. They're a noise impact. They're a physical impact. They impact wildlife in this valley. They impact residents. They bring a lot of emotion to meetings. And I don't want to say, you know, this is where I think helicopters should be, because that's not my decision to make for this community. But I also will say that I have not yet seen the healthy dialogue that needs to take place in order to make the decision as a community. And I will say that we do need to have that conversation. I don't think helicopters are going away. So I think it's a question we need to think about. And part of that is in the planning work that hopefully I can support if I'm elected to Borough Assembly.
What are ways that the assembly could support small businesses in Ames?
Yeah, that's a great question. I heard once, I think at the Southeast Conference 2 years ago when they were here, that Haynes per capita has some of the highest number of independent small businesses. I could be wrong, but I remember hearing that statistic thrown around at Southeast Conference, which is amazing, right? That we have a diverse economy. That's awesome. But I know there's a lot of challenges facing small businesses. I've been trying to do my research in the early weeks of my campaign to talk to small business owners, those who have been here a really long time, to those who are trying to emerge as small businesses now. And I hear some similarities. One is it's hard to be a business owner in this borough. And I've asked, okay, what does that mean? Well, some people have said it's hard to get the permits required to expand my business, or it's hard to just get help from the borough in the permits required to keep my annual business license and operations alive. Okay, that's good to know. Another thing I've heard is for new emerging businesses, it's hard to get the space to actually be a business in this community. You might have to rent space. And as a new business, it's hard to rent space. It's hard to get financing through the small business loan programs that are available if you're just renting a space and it's not your own space. And unfortunately, a lot of small businesses that might choose to start up here are looking at space rentals because a capital project is really expensive. Another big issue I hear from small business owners is, where can I get financing to support my business, my new idea or my ongoing business? And making those resources available is really important. You know, there's a lot of federal grant opportunities through the Small Business Administration for the Economic Development Agency at the federal level, but those are big processes with lots of paperwork, and it's hard to work through those. So it's like, you know, a little bit of how much, you know, how much is any borough assembly one member or even the assembly going to be able to help on that? And I think that's a question I'm still kind of working through with understanding my role. But gosh, I hope there are ways I can, in my position, if I were elected, support small businesses, because it seems such a keystone part of our community. And I hope it can only grow and flourish.
What is your opinion of the work Constantine is doing?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've heard lots of different ways of explaining Constantine in this community. Some people have said it's a mine. Some people are saying it's not mine, a mine. It's just exploration. I think it's important. You know, this is their wording. It's an advanced exploration phase for mining development in the valley. So we have an advanced exploration project for mining. And that word, to me, Constantine, should come with a lot of heavy responsibility on the borough to figure out the best way to steward this valley through a very complex issue. It's a word that means decision-making, because ultimately our borough government is going to be involved in the decision-making processes for this valley and how it moves forward. And Constantine, or whatever name it will be in several years, will be a part of that fabric, potentially, at least in the near term. So it's a word that's loaded in this community, and I get it, and it elicits strong feelings on both sides. But what I know at this point in time is that there's a lot of conversations not happening about Constantine or American Pacific Mining, Constantine North. I mean, I've heard people say they don't even know who it is. And that's not a great sign of communication in our community. So I hope that what we can do, if I'm elected to Haynesborough Assembly, is have the conversation so the public isn't in the dark about what's happening and what the name of the corporation that's not local. They're a multinational corporation with investments from investors, yes, in Japan, probably other places, and Canadian exploration, that our community feels like they have a handle on what's going on.
In the same vein, as some people are expressing fears that the Haynes Highway is going to become heavily used for truck traffic, with potentially some ore transfer out the Lutac area. What is your view on that? What's the role of the borough in addressing or mitigating that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, what's really nice about societies is that they often are built either from or around other societies and community structures. And in the case of Haynes, we can look no further than Skagway to understand a bit about what truck traffic means to a community in a borough. And Skagway has dealt with truck traffic, specifically for ore transport, for a number of years. And one of the challenges that they have is that there's roadside contamination because those trucks were not covered. And so there's an aspect of ore, if we're talking specifically about ore transport, but can come from a lot of different things that come down a roadway, called fugitive dust, which is kind of just what it is. It's dust that runs in different directions and you can't quite tell where it went or where it's coming from. That fugitive dust can create roadside contamination, and Skagway is dealing with that. They have a lot of roadside contamination due to ore transport. And in the Haynes Valley, our highway is next to the river, which, I mean, our highways used to be the river, right? And in prior times, the highways were rivers and trails. And so we have this opportunity to steward a place, a river, in the case of the Haynes Highway, the Chilkat and Klaheeny Rivers and the Chilkat River watershed, into the future. And so anything that comes down that highway or up that highway, we should be thinking, how is this impacting the river, the salmon, the water? the soils around those areas, because we eat from those soils and drink from that water in some cases, or at least we're drinking it through the salmon that many of us are catching out of the river system. So we want to be really knowledgeable about what's coming down the road and what's going up the road.
Mm-hmm. What's your vision for tourism in Haines?
I would love to see tourism continue to flourish in this community. Our visitors mean so much to our local businesses, but they also mean a lot to us who live here. I mean, I love welcoming visitors, and in my past time here, last summer I had some extra time, so I was able to do some bike tours for Sockeye Cycles, because I had never really interacted with cruise ship passengers in a direct way, and I really wanted to work for a local operator and learn about the cruise ship passengers who come to our community. And oh my gosh, like, I had so much fun. Like, you know, not to mention the bike out to Chilkoot Lake is absolutely beautiful every day you do it, and back, and there's bears, sure, and there's eagles, but like, it's just so fun to learn about people and why they choose to come to Haines and the Chilkat Valley and what gets them excited and the random questions that they ask about berries and birds. And I mean, tourists just bring like a energy and inquisitiveness to our community that is, you know, it's immeasurable in a lot of ways. So I would love to find ways to bolster our tourism economy. And there's a whole realm of work being done right now in what's called regenerative tourism, which is tourism that comes into a community but also gives back. And it can be giving back in, say, like direct philanthropic investment in, say, a trail system, or it can be indirect in the sense that regenerative tourism means people are coming to your community and learning about the whole community, and they're investing in the place, and that may make them come first as a cruise ship passenger, but then the next time they might come as an independent traveler and just spend a week here, and all of a sudden, you know, we've been able to draw people not once, but twice or three times to our community in the ways that we want to, you know, and that's what's awesome about Haines, is that, you know, unlike some communities in Southeast Alaska that have only certain modes of tourism, we have tourists that come here from the road system, that come here from cruise ships, we have independent travelers, and even that diversity of tourist and visitor who comes here is a huge asset to us. So yeah, definitely a super important part of our economy, but also who we are and how we can celebrate who we are.
What about winter tourism? How could we promote that?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this. For folks that know me, they know that I love cross-country skiing and being out in winter in general. One of those kids that grew up wearing spandex, getting forced out into the cold. In Michigan, that's where I grew up. You know, it can get pretty cold in the winter, cross-country skiing with my dad. But I would love to see us expand upon winter tourism activities, particularly with outdoor recreation. Just last winter, Haines Hudson Trails started grooming a small section of a private landowner's land that we had permission on to do some trail grooming, so that you have like a nice groomed trail for walking, for cross-country skiing. We were able to link it up with Tokchinook Watershed Council land. They were let us groom on their land. And it was, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 kilometers of groomed trail. It was awesome. Like, we didn't put the word out, but every time I went out there, there were people walking and skiing and just happy to be outside. And this was in like late December. I don't know if people remember, but you know, there wasn't a ton of snow, but there was just enough. But it's like, it's dark most of the day, and yet those hours of daylight, like, people were out there. Even once it started raining on the trails, people were still getting out there. So it just makes me so happy. And it really showed, like, wow, there is a ton of opportunity here. And I have friends in Whitehorse and Juneau that are always asking, like, hey, you know, we want to come to Haines in the winter. And the not to call them out, but I guess I am, like, Liam and Tracy did this awesome program with skiers from Juneau who came up here to come skiing. Cause you know, for Juneau, Haines can kind of be the snow mecca. If we have the winter, you know, that we often have. And so we had some high school students from the Nordic ski team in Juneau up here, and they were stoked, and they were skiing at 25 mile where Jim's Stanford grooms. And it was just like, yes, like there's so much opportunity in this valley. And it brought it all home to me because last spring I was ski racing in Europe at World Masters for cross country skiing. And I was skiing 100% on a man-made snow loop that was 5 kilometers in length, just like a dribble loop. I mean, I was surrounded by dirt and like flowers coming up. There was no snow. And I was like, wow. I mean, in the worst snow year that Haines has, we have more snow than what I skied on for an international level ski competition. So, like, we have a ton of opportunity here. Like, I think Eric Stevens had posted something, you know, in a bad year, we get more snow on our, you know, in our snow measurements than Utah, and it's banner year. So we might think, like, oh, we don't get a lot of snow, but oh, we have so much snow compared to a lot of places. And you know, winter is getting scarce in other parts of the country. And so we could really bolster our winter offerings just in terms of the fact that we have winter here.
Mm-hmm. There's talks recently about reviewing the rules at the assembly level for recusing oneself from a vote. Relating to conflict of interest. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I think that it's important to recuse due to conflicts of interest. I understand that's challenging in a small town, but I also think there's not any, you know, there's not any bulk of votes that happen on an issue where at least, you know, right now we could necessarily foresee where no one on the assembly would ever be able to speak because there's so many conflicts of interest, or at which point maybe that person shouldn't be on assembly. But I think it's important. I've worked for many different organizations over the course of my professional career at this point in time. And I have never once worked for an organization that didn't make me sign a conflict of interest form. And that's a university administration, that's nonprofit management, executive leadership, always have to sign a conflict of interest form, at least declaring where those conflicts of interest might be. But the reason for that form is so you know if you're going to end up doing something that's in direct conflict of interest, you know, you can call that out ahead of time and be honest about it and recuse yourself from that activity, or in this case, from that vote. I think that's an issue we should hold all elected officials to. And I will definitely hold myself to based on what I do in this community. I do a lot of work for Chilkat Indian Village and Clukwan. And if the borough were to vote on an issue specific to the tribal government's request from Clukwan, then I would have to talk to the manager and mayor about recusing myself from that vote. And I would hope that the public would keep me accountable on whether or not, you know, they felt the recusal was necessary.
How do you approach affordable housing in Haines?
Yeah, affordable housing is a national issue and a big one for this community. You know, it's especially concentrated in small communities. I think there's a lot of really interesting models out there that have been done in communities of similar size. In one mountain town community I can think of in Colorado, for example, they came up with a specific policy that for affordable housing, if you were a resident of 3 years or more, you could apply for a certain subset of houses that were available at a certain cost. And it put a cap on the amount a house in a certain zoned area of town could be sold for. It was specifically to attract residents to live in downtown in the specific mountain town. It's Crested Butte, Colorado. I was familiar with the mayor at the time who was working on this ordinance. He's a friend of mine. So I was really curious to see, you know, how a community that was seeing rapid growth and a real challenge to affordable housing took it on at the ordinance level and then at the planning level as well. And so I would anticipate, given this is such a big topic in our community, that through our affordable housing committee, working with our planning commission, informing our borough assembly, we're starting to structurally put in place the processes for understanding what it is that's needed and the kind of likely policy changes that are going to be required in order to make affordable housing a reality for the people in our community and who choose to move here and stay here.
What global trends do you see affecting Haines now or in the future?
Yeah, one big global trend I see impacting Haines, which we're already seeing, right, is remote and location-neutral workers. And I almost hate to lump workers into certain workforces because it, you know, assumes a class system of some kind. But I do think that, you know, remote and location-neutral workers, those people who can choose to live in a community and just choose it. They don't have to choose it based on their work. They can just choose a place. Is an opportunity for Haines to consider, you know, how we define industry and how we define infrastructure in a completely new way. And it's already taking on, you know, community conversations in the sense that maybe it allows us to ask ourselves, what do we really want as a community? Because there's some people who are going to move here that are just moving here to be here. There's also people who are here and this is their only place. And how do we mesh those new people coming to the community who are choosing to be here with the people who have always been here and finding common ground to decide the future of this community together. So that's a big one because I see that trend in mobile workforce as not just the number of people that are living in the community, but the values that will drive the future of a community and the decision-making structures. That being said, any one industry that we choose to invest in might bring an entirely new workforce to our community? And do we feel like an influx of any number of people can be supported with current infrastructure? Because there's a lot of small communities in the United States that during COVID and after COVID saw a huge influx of people coming to their community, and they didn't necessarily have the infrastructure in place. I lived in Montana for a little while, and one of those small towns that's now grown by over 220% over the last 3 years is finding that it's really hard for their emergency medical professionals to get out to the suburban areas and the amount of time required to really be considered quick response. So, you know, that maybe isn't necessarily a specific example of what's needed in our town now, but those are the kinds of things we should be talking about. What, you know, do we have the services for more people? If we do or if we don't, you know, what do we need to bring on? What do we need to put more investment into?
Where do you see Haines in 50 years?
Wow. There's so many possibilities, right? My grandma is 104, and I think she's, you know, toward the end of her life. And I think of the changes that she has seen in her 104 years. She was born in 1919. And even if I went back half her life, you know, that's like going back to, at this point, the, you know, early 1970s, right? And how much has changed since then, you know? I think we could be in so many different places in 50 years. But what I hope above all hopes for this valley is that the very core of what we enjoy doing, which is for most people that I've talked to, outdoors, berry gathering, fishing, sitting by the beach, watching the tide come in, hanging out in community, that these things can continue and hopefully flourish. And I have the incredible privilege of working for the Chilkat Kwan and Chilkat Indian Village in Klukwan, where the perspective on the future goes out so many generations that it's not just what happens in the next 50 years, but it's what happens in the next 500 years or 1,000 years. It's like, can we have wild salmon? Can we can we have wild salmon that we can catch and eat? You know, what a gift. Can we sit next to a river and hear ravens and eagles and magpies and hermit thrushes? I mean, those moments, right, that keep us all here and grounded. And I just hope that those are available to the future generations. And for those who don't know me, I've spent a large portion of my life as a biologist, just as an observer of the natural world and somebody who has to take in information, distill it, and somehow figure out like a management, you know, plan or a decision on a number of traps that can be set in a community for this or that. And it's hard work to just sometimes sit there because you don't always know what you're looking for. But in that work, I've seen places change dramatically. And so I don't doubt that change comes to the Chilkat Valley like everywhere else. I just hope that the change we have can come at the speed of our own adaptation as the people living here and the resilience that we can hopefully build for that change.
Thank you. Any last words?
I would just like to say that we live in an incredible place. And if elected to Borough Assembly, I would like everyone to know that I will take the job seriously. I will work hard for you. I will think about how special this place is every day and your place in it. And I will hold what you tell me and what you care to share with me with as much trust and safety as I can.
Natalie Dawson, thank you.
Thank you.